Good evening, Bob Alcoholic. Let's see here. I want to thank Mark for inviting me out, and my friend Tracy, who usually would be sitting there, but threw me a curveball. So we were out here, I guess, a while back. She did the big talk. I did 10 minutes. Now I'm going to elaborate a little bit. Welcome to the new people. I believe somewhere over here, was it Tiffany who was new? Yeah, welcome. Real quick, you don't have to raise your hand, but just how many under 6 months do we have in the meeting? Okay, cool. Yeah. So I like to try to speak to the new guys and the new ladies. My sobriety date, May the 6th, 2002. My last drink, August 28th, 2001, and I have been going to meetings since that time, but I wasn't a quick study, let's say. So I took dirty chips for 9 months. I smoked weed every day after meetings, and I needed something to take the edge off after getting sober, right? I'm coming off of 2/5 of vodka a day. I'm shaking like a leaf. I can't keep peas on a fork or a spoon. I got to put my face down on the plate and kind of push it in because I'm shaking so bad. So, I did what I had to do early on, but early on, I felt like I deserved a 30, a 60, a 90-day chip for not drinking. Weed was whatever. I never got into any trouble or arrested behind anything other than alcohol. I was 36 when I got sober. I met somebody in the back who's about the same age I was, who's got 60 days. So there's hope. I'm a low-bottom drunk. When I got sober, the end of my drinking, I'll kind of skip around. May 2001, I'm living in a double-wide trailer in Pahrump with my mom. That's what a good alcoholic does when in his mid-30s, when times are tough. You go knocking on the door to the one last ace in the hole that I could play, my one trump card that wouldn't kick me to the curb. Everybody else had kicked me to the curb. And mom was always there to take me in. And she was told by many of people, like, you gotta go tough love. But she couldn't do that. Then in May of 2001, I found my mom. My mom had a heart attack and died in bed. She was 59. I was 36. And that kind of started me. That was May of 2001. That started my journey. Obviously, I didn't quit drinking there. But I'll regress and go back to the beginning. I was born in the Valley. I grew up in Thousand Oaks. I'm not sure you guys know where that is out there. Yeah. Today, Thousand Oaks is about 120,000 people. I grew up, and it was about 15,000. We had the Caneo Valley Days Parade. It was like the horses. It was like an old Western town. We had the chili cook-off. And if you told anybody you were from Thousand Oaks, they said, where? That's way out there. And so I came from a working middle-class family. My dad was a barber, owned a barber shop for 30 years there in Thousand Oaks, named after the high school team, the Lancers. My mom worked before there was Craigslist. If you wanted to buy or sell something, you'd pick up the recycler or the penny saver. My mom worked. those of you who are 40-ish and over, remember that. If you're under 40, you probably don't know what the penny saver or the recycler is. No big deal. You got Craigslist now. Has everything that Craigslist has except maybe the workers in there that they have in there. But working middle class family. I had everything that I needed. Yeah, but I was a liar and a cheat from the gate. Right? I pinched money out of my mom's wallet. I remember maybe in the second grade, I'm taking a dollar bill out of her billfold because I'm going after school to the babysitter's house, and I know around 3 or 4 o'clock, the Helms Bakery guy makes his way around the neighborhood. And if you're under 45, you don't know who the Helms Bakery guy is, but those of us, right? I'm 58, so Helms Bakery had the donuts, and it was like the ice cream man, but a little bit better, in my opinion. But yeah, so I mean, from the start, I was a liar, cheat, and a thief, and I can remember stealing magnets for the refrigerator from Safeway, probably 8 or 9 years old, and they were of different beers, Michelob, Budweiser, and they were the magnet, and I thought that was the greatest thing, and I got home, and I stole them, and I put them on the refrigerator, and my mom's like, where'd those come from? Oh, you know, I got them at the store, and she's like, you ain't got no money for that at the store, so she got me to confess, and she grabbed me by the ear, and we went down and saw the store manager, and I had to confess that, you know, I stole from the store, and, you know, she was going to show me, but, you know, that didn't stop me. That just means I had to get a little bit better at my craft. And that was kind of like my MO all along. In school, early on, I was a decent student. I was an athlete. I played all kinds of sports, baseball, basketball, football. And that kind of kept me active and social. And then somewhere in high school, I got my driver's license on my 16th birthday. I was really focused on that. I paid for my own driver's training from a little job, so I didn't have to go through the school to do that. And then once I had my car, I lost all interest in, as far as sports went at school. Partying just kind of became the thing. And out there in Thousand Oaks, what you do when you're in high school on a Friday or a Saturday night, I'm not sure if any, there's a shopping center there, Park Oaks Shopping Center, where everybody meets on a Friday or a Saturday, and you find out where the parties are at, and there's probably a couple of options, and that's where you'll pregame. And Thousand Oaks, nothing happens really too much after 10 o'clock, and so the cops would eventually, you know, show up. But keg parties, backyard heavy metal bands, going to the park before, you know, maybe an hour before the party and knocking back a fifth with a couple of buddies just to kind of, you know, get ready for the night. That's kind of what we did in high school. And alcohol worked for me. It brought me out of my shell. I could talk to women, to girls. Otherwise I was very introverted and shy, that type of thing. But the alcohol just kind of shot a courage, as they say. I didn't get into really too much trouble with the law through high school. Just made my way through. My mom and dad got divorced right after I got out of high school, which for me was a blessing because my dad was on my rear end. What are you going to do after high school? You know how dads are. He knew I wasn't going to college, so you got to get a job. You got to do this. You got to do that. And then he moved out, and then I was able to kind of manipulate my mom and kind of just kind of do whatever I wanted. I started picking up a tab, so to speak, behind alcohol, really right around my 21st birthday, coincidentally. Now, I drank and drove all the time from probably 17 all through high school. Not all the time, which was what I would eventually be doing, but right around my 21st birthday, I proceeded to pick up my first DUI, and that happened 4 years in a row, four DUIs in 4 years. And you would think, most people, you get a DUI, okay, maybe that's a bad break, and then maybe the second one, okay, now I got a problem, something's got to happen. But I rolled around with a bunch of guys who did the same thing I did, and nobody else got in trouble, and I was just thinking it was just a bad break. But eventually, I started having to go away for that. Now, I can still vote, and I carry a gun sometimes, so it just misdemeanor stuff, no felony stuff, but I did live in up here at Mira Loma. Some of you guys know that used to be an L.A. County facility, like similar to Wayside back in the day. It's somewhere out here. I forget where it's off the freeway, but I was up there for 6 months, and then I had to go to Ventura County for another DUI for another 6 months. So all in all, you know, nothing major, but, you know, like when I said, yeah, that's me. Four DUIs is a big problem. But all in all, behind everything, I probably was away for about a year out of my life behind drinking, you know, from incarceration, violation, little petty stuff, 60 days, 90 days, 180 days, nothing major. But when you pack it all in, you guys know the deal. they give you probation. You know, you don't do something, they violate you, you go back, and that's the revolving door. Some of you guys might have been through that, which I'm sure. So after that happened, when I turned 26, right around 26, while I was locked up the last time, my mom and my sister moved to Vegas. I got out of jail. I was on formal probation. I couldn't leave immediately, so I worked it out with probation. I was allowed to leave the state, and I had to do some alcohol classes over in Nevada, but they let me leave. I wanted to kind of get a clean slate, right? Because my problem was the guys I was running around with. So if I could just get a new start, everything would be okay. Well, you know, the old saying, you take yourself with you, and problems tend to follow you. I didn't drink immediately after I got out of jail and moved out there. I smoked, but eventually I did drink, and things just escalated to another level. I'll fast forward a little bit. I was married briefly. It was like 6 months. We lived together for about a year. I got married. I got divorced. Moved back in with my mom. Living in a double wide trailer in the middle in Pahrump. You guys know not a lot happening out in Pahrump. My buddies from Thousand Oaks, who my mom was like a mom to a couple of my buddies. Who didn't have moms. She was like the neighborhood mom, so to speak. And so when she passed, some of my buddies came up who I hadn't seen in a few years, and they took a look at me, and they saw I wasn't doing too well. And so I had to leave that house, and I had nowhere to go. I put everything I owned into a green trash bag, one of those big trash bags you use for, you know, picking up the lawn. And I had a duffel bag, and I had like $15 in my pocket, and I moved back to Thousand Oaks with one of my buddies, who happened to be working. He lays carpet, and he was working on a house, and he told the lady mid job, "Hey, I'll be back. I gotta go support my buddy. Give me about 2 or 3 days." And she said, "Yeah, no problem." So he did. He came up, and I came back with him, and I was staying with him. He took me over to this job. And I helped him finish the job. He introduced me to this lady who was she was involved with the church, and she knew my story, and she just kind of took a liking to me some, I guess. She was also a property manager. She had odd jobs. So she helped me out and put me to work, painting a couple of these houses inside, changing some toilets, miscellaneous stuff. And she gave me a place to stay, and that was big. And she liked to drink, and so we drank together after work and stuff like that. But she had no idea who exactly I was as far as my drinking went. And she soon discovered that my drinking was next level. I was waking up in the middle of the night, and in the garage, her daughter had gotten married about a year previous to that, and she had leftover champagne in the corner of the garage, like two cases of warm champagne, and I would be shaking DT so bad, I would get up in the middle of the night, I would go in the garage, I would pop a bottle of champagne, great, warm champagne in my underwear in the garage at 3 a.m, just to try to take the edge off, anything to take the edge off. She had some schnapps bottles, or her ex-husband worked for Seagram's, and these bottles had dust, and they were like corroded on the top, and I'm knocking all those back. And she, one day she discovered all that, and she was, "Yeah, you got a big problem. You're going to have to go." And I don't know why that moment did something to me, because people had been telling me for a long time that I needed to stop drinking. But I called a friend of mine whose mom I knew was in AA, and I talked to her, and I said, "I don't know what to do." I had been to AA meetings when I was inside before, but that was strictly to get out of your cell. You get coffee and a cookie and that type of thing just to kill time. I barely paid attention. So she had some guys come over to the house and pick me up. Now, for the first week that I stopped drinking, I was in bed, sweating, shaking, barely eating, drinking orange juice, eating candy bars, a lot of that is kicking the sugar, I think, behind the alcohol withdrawal. And a lot of that is just putting that back in your body. But these guys picked me up, took me to a meeting, and that just kind of started my course. I can remember being new and dreading the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meeting early, because when I held your hand, I was embarrassed because my hands literally still shook like this. And it was a lot of fear there. I met a guy in sobriety. One night I went to a meeting. I had about 2 weeks sober, didn't have a sponsor. He knew a friend of mine from school who I was talking to, I happened to see at a meeting, asked me if I had a sponsor, didn't have a sponsor, said he would be my temporary sponsor, which I could deal with that. That wasn't full commitment. I like the word temporary to begin with. So, okay, I have an out. You know, I like having outs, loopholes, that type of thing. His sponsor was Larry T. Chris J was my first sponsor out of Thousand Oaks. And Larry was his sponsor. And he got me active. And one good thing about Chris went in and out. But when Chris was in, he was all in. And he saved me. And he introduced me to the Pacific Group. He was going to Bellflower every Monday. Larry made him go to the Pacific Group on Wednesdays. And then he would drag me and my buddy Ryan down there. And Ryan was a guy about 10 years younger than me, mid-20s, who my sponsor Chris had picked up about a week before me. And he had a car, he had a truck, and he picked me up every night. We went to meetings together. And if you're new in sobriety, for me, obviously they tell you to get commitments, which is all good, right? Get commitments, get a sponsor, keep your sobriety date, get active. But for me, even bigger than that, was having a wingman who I could go to meetings with, who had similar sobriety, and we could bounce things off of, going through the same type of stuff that I was going through, which for me was even bigger than having a sponsor, somebody we could talk crap to about our sponsor as well. So that was good. So that's where I got introduced to the Pacific Group, and I started going to the Pacific Group after about a year sober. And then I met my current sponsor after Chris, who I said went in and out. He went out, and he stayed out for a while. And then I got my current sponsor, who I've had for about 21 years. I'll be 23 years sober May 6th, knock on wood. And he's been my sponsor since right after my first birthday. And Pacific Group for me, active group, similar to like what Mark's brought up here with you guys. We have a lot of functions at the group, and I needed something like that to stay active, more than just going to meetings and coming home. So softball, we have a retreat up at Mountain High every year, just a lot of stuff to keep you active within the group. So like my wife referenced, she was working for my first sponsor. That's how we met. And he was speaking at her meeting in the Valley, and I showed up over there. And that's kind of like where boy meets girl on AA campus, and then the rest is history, right? So like she said, we start dating. She has 3 kids. They have just gone through their traumatic experience in August of 2001. I went through mine with my mom in May of 2001. And I don't know, it's just like, for me, it was perfect. I wouldn't change a thing. I love the kids. Lauren was 6, I think. She was 7. She just turned 30. My son Matthew is 32. And we have 2 grandkids. Matthew's just was married not too long ago. 3-year-old grandson and a granddaughter who will be a year old next month. And those are the gifts in sobriety. Chris had me write a list of like a gratitude list or a list of things that I wished, like a wish list, so to speak, right? And I did something like that, and AA has surpassed anything that I could ever have imagined times 10. Like I said, I'm one of those guys that I got to burn it all to the ground before I really say that I have a problem. If you got here and you still have a car and you still have a relationship, man, kudos to you for finding your way in and knowing that you had a problem when you did. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to end up on the street, so to speak. But however you get here is great. So one of my first job in sobriety, I had a little bit of training previously in the mortgage business. I got a job when I got sober with a company, and one thing led to another, and a couple years go by, and I'm running an office here in Lancaster, of all places. I think it was we were off of K, and we worked with the home builder out here, KB Home. And I had about 7 or 8 guys and gals that worked under me, that worked out in the field for them. And one day, one of my guys comes to me and tells me that he's going to leave. He's giving me his 2-week notice, and he's going to join the LAPD. I said, okay, cool. He's probably, like, at the time, he's in his late 20s. He's looking for a long-term career. I said, yeah, no problem. And he said, you may or may not get a phone call from them because they want to know who my current manager is at work, and they want to know about all your previous work experience. I say, yeah, no problem, put me down. And sure enough, a few months go by, and I get a phone call. Yeah, this is Lieutenant so-and-so from the LAPD. And even though I knew I hadn't done anything wrong, I was like, LAPD, what the hell? Yeah, I'm paranoid. I still get... when I see a cop roll up next to me, it's just natural. Like, nothing's wrong. I mean, 22 years sober, but just, you know. So she talks to me about him, and I say, yeah, he's a great guy. And you know, I reflect back, and I'm like, if they only knew who I was, who they're actually calling for a reference, you know. Like, the guy who, you know, on more than a dozen occasions was in the back of a squad car. So he called me a few months after that. He said, hey, man, I appreciate it. I'm going to the academy, and it's all good. And I said, yeah, man, that's great. Okay, no problem. If you ever need anything else, give me a holler. And then about, I don't know, maybe 5-6 years go by, and my phone, and I still had his name in there in my phone book. And I'm like, wow, that's weird. Hey, what's going on, Peter? He said, hey, I've decided that I want to try to join the Secret Service, and I need to put you down on my application. And I'm like, yeah, okay, fine, same type of thing. And sure enough, maybe two or three months go by, and I get a call, and he said, yeah, Mr. Klobuchar, yeah, this is Tommy Lee Jones with the Men in Black. Yeah, this is so-and-so with the Secret Service. I'm like, yeah, sure, what, you got a few questions for me? I'm more than happy. He goes, no, actually, I'd like to meet with you in person. And I'm like, shit. Okay. So I said, I'm going to make it difficult on the guy. He's over, you know, he's downtown somewhere. I'm in Woodland Hills. I said, well, there's a Starbucks down the block from my house. If you want to meet me over there, I'm more than happy. Here's the address. But I mean, I'm not going downtown for anything. You're going to come to me. He said, yeah, no problem. Okay, we'll meet. So sure. And I said, you can't miss me. I'll have a blue baseball cap on. I'm 6'5". I'll be in a sweatshirt, blah, blah, blah. He goes, yeah, okay. And he goes, you won't miss me. I'll have the black suit on with the sunglasses. And I go, yeah, and the earpiece in the ear. He goes, no, I don't have that in. So anyways, yeah, meet the guy at Starbucks. We go through it's just one of those things where only in Alcoholics Anonymous can a degenerate drunk who sold plasma downtown in Las Vegas for his next fix get called from LAPD and the Secret Service for a reference. You know, not for, like, you're in trouble, but, hey, we respect your opinion, so to speak. And I mean, it's like you know, bizarre, but only in AA. Let's see. And I'm not a quick study as far as cleaning up wreckage of my past. Here's another story. I left Pahrump when my mom passed away, but I had two pending DUI cases in Pahrump, oh, by the way, that I had just picked up within 60 days from my mom passing away. And so I hadn't been, my court date hadn't come up yet, and I left town, so I left those behind. And I was able to come back to California and somehow get a driver's license, and I was living my best life with my wife and the kids and 6-7 years sober. Something came in the mail about renewing my license, and the systems weren't speaking to each other early on, but now they were. So now I had to make the effort to go back to court, and I went and I got some letters from people in AA on my behalf, and me and Claudia went out there to Pahrump, and I said, okay, now here's a couple $1,000. If they're gonna keep me for 30 or 60, I need you to put some money on my. You know, I'm getting ready. Like, I'm ready to go. I'm ready. They're gonna take me away. You know, I'm already planning it out. Everything's gonna go bad. But sure enough, I get there, and they had all these letters that we had faxed ahead of time, and you know, only in aid, the judge is like, yeah, you know, we see you're doing better. Pay the fine, go to some classes back in California. And so, you know, just cleaning up the wreckage of your past of stuff is huge. Just for the peace of mind of having that weight off the shoulder. It's me and my dad didn't have the best relationship growing up, just because, you know, I was, you know, doing my thing, and he would get in the way of it. And he moved away. He moved to Arizona, and about 5 years ago, his wife, his second wife, passed away. Now, in sobriety, we had kind of repaired our relationship a little bit. We were talking. I had started sending him checks, cleaning up. Me and him share the same first. I'm the third, Robert Andrew the third, my dad and my grandfather. So it's real easy for me to take my dad's credit card, and we show him my driver's license. It's the same name, which I had done that in the past. So I was making payments, and finally one day he just said, "You know what? I appreciate everything. You know, sending that." And I still reach out to him. He moved in with my aunt in Glendale, and so I get to take him around and go shopping. He's blind. He's almost. He can see around his place, but he doesn't drive or anything, and so that's AA working, doing for me that I wouldn't do for myself. Let's see, where am I at here? Change careers. Right around 50, when I was 50. Well, the other thing that's starting to creep up on me is my mom was 59 when she passed away, and I'm going to be 59 in May. And she didn't take care of herself. She smoked and drank to the bitter end. And, so a couple of buddies recently, right around my age, passing away. So it just kind of puts everything in perspective. You don't think about certain things when you're 30s that you now start to think as you're pushing 60. But, so I changed careers. A buddy of mine runs this security, private security, executive protection / bodyguard. And he said, yeah, you want to give it a shot? And my wife was very supportive in that. And that's kind of been my path the last 6 or 7 years. I got hooked up with one guy for about 5 years, and went around and got to see parts of the world that I wouldn't be able to see on my own, and certain places. So that's been kind of a new adjustment, kind of like a second career in life. Yeah, I'm drawing a blank. And it's only 9:07. And when I would sit in the back, because I used to sit in the back when I was new, and that's what I think all guys do when they're new, and they judge, you know, we judge and, you know, talk shit to our buddies. And but I always, you know, when a guy got up there, when I was new and somebody like myself got up there with 22 years, it was hard for me to relate because that just seemed so far out there. And I just want, you know, the new guys to know, for me, let's talk about some firsts in sobriety for me. 36 years old, first checking account, first credit card, first car that I took to get brakes where I didn't grind the calipers and the rotors into the ground, right? You guys can relate to that. You know, when the brakes start going metal on metal, that just means you got to pump them a little more and start stopping a little sooner. But now today I take my car in before my brakes and everything goes sideways. And the other thing I did in the back is you can tell when a speaker's struggling, i.e. myself right now, and you're like, damn, bro, you got like 5 minutes left and you got nothing to say. It's okay to tap out early. Don't think you got to stand up there and fill time. And like, we want to hear you for five more minutes talk in circles. So with that, I want to welcome everybody. AA is the best thing that's ever happened to me. And I'm going to call it a night. Thank you.